Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
I don't believe what I just saw.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezra Ginsberg is unfortunately under the weather today, and he'll not be with us in studio, but I'm pleased to be joined in studio by my good friend, Richard Pollock. Producer Tim is manning the getting us in and out of break perfectly, and Michael Remus is operating the R desk, and you'll hear more about that in a little bit. Richard, hey now.
Pleased to be here, Drew. Hey now.
Hey now.
Missing Ezzy, obviously. It's gonna, you know, that's a loss, but we're going to have to step up our game.
I had no idea that people could still get scurvy. And yet, Ezzy somehow has managed to find to get scurvy. I had no idea. Anyways, coming up on today's show, in mere minutes, we'll be hearing from Craig Button. He's with the NHL Network. He's a former general manager of the Calgary Flames, former front office type in the NHL. We're thrilled to welcome to the program Craig Button. Coming up in the third hour, Matthew Sakaris from the Globe and Mail will be joining us. He's a Vancouver Canucks beat writer in Vancouver, so we're thrilled to talk about the hottest team in the NHL and quite possibly the Stanley Cup favorite right now.
My preseason selection.
It's true. I'll give you credit where credit's due there, Richie.
Well, nothing's happened yet, so I don't want credit. But, I mean, this is a team that I think not only preseason, but now they look better than they ever have.
Yeah.
They haven't. I don't think the team ever has looked this good in their whole existence.
And no. I mean, even in 94, their last cup run, they haven't looked as good as this.
You know, they weren't the overwhelming favorite that year.
No.
And the truth is this is a team that just the other night, you know, they went in, they lost 1-0 to New York, came back the next day, beat Washington 4-2 yesterday, beat Washington 4-2 on the road, and they did it fairly handily. I mean, this team is a well-oiled machine. We're going to talk more about it with Matthew in the third hour.
That's right.
But there's nothing not to like. I really think there's nothing not to like there.
And also joining us in the third hour, joining us live in studio, Leah Hextall from CTV Winnipeg will be making her inaugural appearance here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're thrilled to welcome Leah to the program. So she's going to join us for an hour, you know, talk some hockey. It'll be an interesting development.
Is Leah's audition? She taking it over for you, Drew?
Am I getting the boot?
I don't know. Am I getting the boot?
I don't know. Is somebody? Are we booting Ezzy? what's happening?
Leah's replacing. Well, Leah's sitting in Ezzy's seat today.
Is Ezzy being usurped?
Yeah, before Leah was actually, before Ezzy, you know, called in sick, we were going to have Leah stand up for the whole show.
So now that there's a seat here, so she can sit. That's nice. Is Craig on the line, Tim? Craig Button from the NHL Network. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Glad to be there.
Thanks for joining us, Craig. Craig, let's start. I mean, you were previously general manager in Calgary, so that's where we want to start. You look at the Flames roster, and you know, there's been lots. You know, they've obviously made the general manager switch. You know, Jay Feaster's now there as the acting general manager. When looking at the Flames roster as it's currently designed, do you think the Flames should blow this whole thing up and start over again, or is there enough talent there and enough, you know, promise that they should just be looking at a sort of a retooling?
Well, you know, that's a great question. But the way I look at it, I don't know if you ever have to blow something up. I think you're always trying to progress and move your team forward into a position of, I mean, ultimately everybody wants to win the Stanley Cup. So you want to position your team to compete for the Stanley Cup. I don't think the Flames at this point in time have enough talent to even consider themselves a Stanley Cup contender. They're not even close to the best teams in the Western Conference. So, you know, until you find a way to add some greater talent, you're going to be really short in that area. That being said, you know, the one thing that I keep looking at when I see the Flames, all I keep seeing is the 06, 07, whatever year you want to pick, Toronto Maple Leafs. And I put them in that category for a number of reasons. I think there's a lot of hope. I think that Jerome Iginla is... This franchise is Matt Sundin. There's a lot of talk about, can you move these guys? Can you trade to start the rebuild? And we see where the Toronto Maple Leafs are 4 or 5 years later after that 06, 07 time frame. I think that's where the Flames are at. I don't think you can retool, you can rebuild, you can blow it up, you can do whatever you want. It's going to take time to get this team back to a position where it can seriously look at itself as a Stanley Cup contender.
That's interesting you say that, Craig. And we had to ask you a similar a question about a similar organization, in my opinion, and it's Ottawa Senators. You know, maybe the part A would be, do you think Brian Murray is going to be the one overseeing the possible rebuild in Ottawa, if that takes place? And B, do you think a rebuild is necessary there, too?
But again, they're another team. You look at, Daniel Alfredson is 38 years old. Jason Spezza is a good young centerman. Erik Karlsson is a good young defenseman. Other than that, where is their skill? Where is their top-end players that you can go and say, wow, we can really go and compete? You know, the amazing thing about the Ottawa Senators is, 07, they were in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yep.
You know, and there was a lot of hope and that this team was gonna take the next step. You know, quite frankly, Brian Murray, the moves he's made have not resulted in this team moving forward. In fact, the moves he's made have resulted in the team taking considerable steps backwards. Mm-hmm. So, you asked me the question, is Brian Murray going to be there? I know Brian Murray has talked about, coming to a point in time when he steps away just because of his age and, how many years he's put into this. So, when you get into a situation like this with your team and it's not performing very well, the changes are inevitable. And I think when you look at the dramatic, and I call it dramatic, swing in fortunes in the last three and a half seasons, I think anything less than a dramatic change in Ottawa would surprise me.
It really is startling. Craig, on that point, before we move over to the West, on that point, in terms of, the flack that Corey Kluson's been getting, in my opinion, last year, the job he did with the roster that he had was quite remarkable. Do you think he's getting criticized unnecessarily?
Yeah, I do, because, one of the things that Al McNeil, wonderful Al McNeil, spent years, he's still involved in hockey, won a Stanley Cup as a coach, part of great teams and management. He always said, he goes, you want to evaluate your team. If you look at your team and you say, okay, this is the best we can do with this group of players, and then the coach is doing his job. And then the focus has to go on to management to get better players. If the team is, you really feel not good enough or not performing well enough, then you can look at the coach. I don't think you can go put a different coach behind the bench. I don't think there'll be any different results. So that tells me that the coach is not the problem. This is a player construction problem, and that falls on management. It doesn't fall on the coach. So, yeah, it's easy to say, oh, fire the coach. Oh, yeah, do this, do that. I don't think the coach is the problem. I think that he's doing as good a job as anybody can do with the group of player and the collection of talent that he has.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Craig Button of the NHL Network. Now, Craig, moving back to the Western Conference, right now, is there a better team in the West than the Vancouver Canucks? And potentially, who is their biggest threat come playoff time?
Well, just based on their play, I don't think anybody can make an argument that the Vancouver Canucks have made a strong statement that they're good, they're strong. You try to look at their weaknesses and say, geez, do they have any? And I think that's what you want to continue to do. They've continued to get better from the start of the season to now. And, I do think they have a serious competitor, and I think it's the Detroit Red Wings. And right now, when I look at the West, clearly to me, the two best teams in the West are Vancouver and Detroit.
In the East, Craig, Philadelphia, for the most part, generally has had, kind of sluggish regular seasons, and they, it feels like they turn on that switch, so to speak. Do you think they're the team to be in the East, or is that Pittsburgh, or are they just neck and neck?
I think they are neck and neck. I think the interesting thing about the whole East, though, is when you have Philadelphia and Pittsburgh in the same division, winning the division becomes so important now.
Yep.
Because, the team that doesn't win it automatically becomes the fourth seed, and, you're going to have a little bit of a harder road. But if that is the case in that division as well, if everything goes according to form, you're going to have Philadelphia and Pittsburgh play in the second round of the playoffs. So, to me, you're going to have, how it falls sometimes in terms of the seeding. Are Philadelphia and Pittsburgh Stanley Cup contenders? Yeah. And potentially you could have one of them out in the second round of the playoffs. I think Philadelphia, when they added Sean O'Donnell and Andre Mazeros, really solidified their defense last summer. And, Chris Pronger, he's been out a month, but that guy helps teams get to a high level of play, and he is an elite defenseman that can be a difference maker, and I think based on that alone, you know, that puts them maybe just a little bit in front of Pittsburgh. But Sidney Crosby comes back and they keep their health there. The Pittsburgh Penguins are a very good team as well.
You know, speaking of division battles, one that was probably unexpected by most is the Southeast Division with Tampa and Washington, going at it there. Craig Kimmington, this is a team that is scoring almost a goal less per game than they were last year. Has scoring possibly become an issue for the Capitals?
It has. And, you know, there's a lot of things when you look at it. You know, a lot of people say about the Washington Capitals and defense. Their defense is great. If you look back to the playoffs last year against Montreal, their problem was they couldn't score. They couldn't give themselves a cushion. They couldn't find a way to expand on a one-goal lead. And, you know, Halak was great, but you got to solve a goaltender.
Yep.
The interesting thing, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the Washington Capitals, they're not very far off last year's pace in terms of points. I really think what's happened to the Washington Capitals is the Southeast Division, Atlanta, Tampa Bay, Florida, and Carolina, have become considerably, considerably better. I'll just share this little bit with you. In 24 games last season, the Washington Capitals against the Southeast Division scored over 4 goals a game.
Wow.
This year, through 16 games against the Southeast Division, they've scored 2.6.
Wow.
So that, I think, really speaks to, you know, that was kind of, we always used to look at the Southeast, Southleast, whatever you wanted to call it.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a cakewalk for the Washington Capitals. Those teams are better, they're better defensively, and they give the Washington Capitals a lot greater challenge. So, this is part of the dynamic of trying to become a better team and trying to put yourself in a position not just to be one-dimensional, and the Capitals have a lot of talent, but to be able to play any type of game. You've seen it with championship teams in the past. Detroit Red Wings, Edmonton Oilers, New York Islanders, they all have to find a way to play in any type of game, because if you don't, you're going to find yourself short come playoff time.
You're tuned to Sports Radio 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're joined by Craig Button of the NHL Network. Craig, going forward to the trade deadline, one of the most sort of interesting situations to keep an eye on is that of Brad Richards in Dallas. You know, pending unrestricted free agent, Dallas with, you know, its ownership difficulties. You know, put your general manager's hat on for a minute if you could. You know, what do you do with the Brad Richards situation, and what do you think the Stars are going to do?
Well, that team is good. They've come in and they've really, I think, based on preseason projections, you know, they've certainly exceeded anybody's expectations. And they're a good team. And, you know, one of the things I think that when you're trying to build your team and you're trying to move forward with your team, and I'm speaking in attendance and trying to gain back the confidence of your fans, I mean, if you all of a sudden go and trade Brad Richards off of a winning team, in March or at the end of February this season, what message are you sending? I would not trade Brad Richards. Brad Richards, I think his cap hit is $7.8 million. So, you know, you're trying to talk and figure out how he fits. It's not like a player is going to go from $3 million to $7.8 million, and you know there's no way you can keep him based on your budget. Brad Richards is already making $7.8 million. I think the decision is, or the discussion is what's the term on Brad Richards? Because if they just slot him in, they could keep him. Yes, they have to make some other decisions, but this is a good team. I think you send the wrong message to your fans. You send the wrong message to your team. Hey, we're good, but we're going to trade this guy for a draft pick. Because I don't think, you know, in today's NHL that you're going to get a whole lot of great players in a trade. I go back to Marian Hossa when he got traded from Pittsburgh to Atlanta. I mean, the Atlanta Thrashers ended up with Angelo Esposito, a first-round draft pick that turned into Dalton Levite, and Colby Armstrong. And, you know, that was for Marian Hossa. So, you know, that's not the type of thing that turns around your franchise, and I think it's really important for the Dallas Stars this season to continue on their winning season. Brad Richards gives them a great chance to win. So I don't unless somebody's going to absolutely blow their brains out at the deadline and to trade for Brad Richards, I think Brad Richards on March 1st will be a Dallas Star.
Craig, speaking of Dallas, Fabian Brunstrom didn't turn out there, and just kind of question of what really has happened with Brunstrom. Was he overhyped? And, I guess the second part of that question is, do you think he'll be able to live up to any kind of those expectations in the hockey hotbed of Toronto?
You know, it's really interesting. It's a great question because, you know, Fabian Brunstrom was, he's a real talented player. And actually, when he came into the league, when he signed with Dallas and ended up starting there, I mean, he played really, really well. And, you know, all of a sudden, I don't know if it was all of a sudden, but then, you know, that adjustment period of can you sustain it? Can you hold it? And, you know, I think he's got the talent, and for whatever reason, well, I don't say for whatever reason, in Dallas, I mean, you saw the emergence of a couple of players, I think specifically Jamie Benn, who really kind of took that spot through his play. And, I mean, that's what competition does. Billy Leno was the other free agent that year the teams were after. They were after Brunstrom and Billy Leno. And Billy Leno last year, you know, they kind of, the Detroit Red Wings moved him along, and, you know, there's a lot of, I guess Billy Leno's not going to make it either. He ends up in Philadelphia, and it's been a really good fit for him. It's been a really good fit for the Philadelphia Flyers. And I think Brunstrom now, I think teams remember, hey, this guy was a pretty talented player. They have the example of Billy Leno. And now Toronto specifically is saying, hey, listen, we liked him. Now let's see if a different environment and situation and fit can help this young man blossom.
Craig, we'll let you go on this question. A team that we are perennially seeing at the top of the Western Conference is currently in 12th, that being the San Jose Sharks. Do the Sharks need to add a defenseman to, A, make a run into the playoffs, and then, B, you know, see if they even have the horses to make a deep run into the playoffs?
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, I think you've nailed a big part of their problem. I mean, they lost Rob Blake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, even Rob Blake at 40 years of age was still a force on the blue line. You know, this is a team, again, when you start to look at the fall-off in talent on their team, I mean, yes, they have Heatley and Marlowe and Thornton, but this is a team that I think that is really falling short. It's great to say, you know, the first thing you need to do is identify what your need is. I can just tell you, two-way strong defensemen, teams aren't giving them away.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not plentiful. So I think that the San Jose Sharks are going to be in a real battle the rest of the way to just qualify for the playoffs. And again, I don't see them in that top group of teams to compete for the Stanley Cup.
Craig Button of the NHL Network, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Olympic Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, glad to be a part of it. Have a great Saturday.
You
thanks,
too, Craig.
You
thanks
too.
Very much.
Yep.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to recap tomorrow. We'll look ahead to...
Recap yesterday.
So recap tomorrow.
What are you, Marty McFly?
Yeah, exactly. We'll recap yesterday. We'll look forward to today in the NHL, and we'll talk about the interview with Craig. Listen to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Minutes past 9. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on this Saturday morning. To get in touch with us, the best way to do it is to join the live chat taking place at www.illegalcurve.com. Also, follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. We'll plan to take some phone calls a little bit later on in the show, so stay tuned if you want to get your 2 cents worth in the hockey world. That is the best way to do it. Also, you can always send us an email, drew@illegalcurve.com. Michael Remus is over there in the yard desk. He's putting up all the links to the stories we talk about, some video from last night's game. So go and Remus, www.illegalcurve.com. Richie, the games last night were, you know, more insignificant than the injuries that came out of the games last night. Of course, the scary one, the very scary one, if you were watching it at all, and we're happy to say that he flew back with the team last night,
yep,
is what happened with Ryan O'Reilly of the Colorado Avalanche. Just sort of a fluke,
yeah,
you know, one of those things that just happens in hockey. A guy, you know, looks like he either hit the skate or he caught an edge, and he sort of went shoulder first, neck first into the boards.
Actually, you know, when we played in actually the summer league, a similar thing happened to me. And I didn't lead. I kind of led neck, and I moved it, and it kind of got shoulder pull. Like, you know, it was a similar thing. I was going into the boards, and you're looking to stop, and you lose your balance, and then you fall right into the boards.
Yeah.
His neck a little bit more. It was a fluke injury. It was nobody was to blame. He has movement in all of his extremities, which is important.
Yeah.
They're worried about a fracture there. I'm not sure the latest update is. Bob McKenzie was updating it last night a fair amount on his Twitter and on TSN. Scary. I mean, but that,
you know, it's one of the risks associated with playing hockey. It's just a fluke.
It's any level too. I mean, you know, the severity of the injury here is most likely caused by the fact that O'Reilly is, you know, playing in the NHL, and the speed is just so great, and the impact is so much, you know, more intense than it is in, you know, in any league, in junior leagues or in rec leagues or whatever it may be. You know, I hope he's better. He's the one, you know, he's the Don Cherry favorite, and he does a lot of little things well. He's no scorer, but he's at a nice,
nice, you know, third, fourth line element to that Colorado, young Colorado team, which we'll talk about a bit later, because, boy, they look good these days.
In fact, they won the game 4-1 against the Minnesota Wild in Minnesota last night. Some other games from last night in a battle of the two teams we just talked about, Calgary and Ottawa. Calgary went into Ottawa, scored 3 goals in the second period, and beat the Senators 3-2.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a battle of teams that are going nowhere.
Yeah, and, you know, and you'll see attendance in Ottawa drop significantly throughout the rest of this year.
And Calgary will probably start every game.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ottawa's just, you know, it's a different town. They're a front-running town there. And I don't say that with any sort of level of insult, but so many people aren't from Ottawa.
You live there.
I live there.
Yeah.
So many people aren't from Ottawa that it often is hard to, you know, get the, when they're struggling, to get the home fans behind them. Philadelphia went into Atlanta. Atlanta's sort of struggling lately.
They are.
They've fallen off a bit. You know, the Flyers are just cruising along in first in the East. They went in there and they beat the Thrashers 5-2.
That's going to be a problem, because I'm writing an article for ESPN next week about the surprise of the Atlanta Thrashers, and I'm writing with another writer.
That was sort of a bit of a gratuitous plug there that you just threw in there for ESPN, and you're writing for ESPN there.
Okay, fair enough. Anyways, so I was talking to one of the writers at ESPN. He's doing some of the interviews with the Thrashers personnel, and he emailed me. He's like, well, the team's been tanking lately, so we'll focus on the overall success. And that's what I'm trying to get at. This team has been struggling lately. Coming back to earth a bit, well, they've actually allowed more goals than they've scored, so that's not a good sign by any means.
142 goals for 145 goals against.
Yeah, and that's not a good sign. At the same time, Drew, this is still a team that's made a lot of progress, and there's a lot of things to be... you know, to be excited about if you're a Thrashers fan.
Or if you're a Jets fan. The game that sort of made my eyes jump out, the score that made my eyes sort of, you know, refocus, and I had to do a double take there. New Jersey 5, Tampa Bay 2. In Tampa Bay last night, the Jersey with 4 goals in the first period. Some guy named Ilya Kovalchuk had a couple goals.
Yeah, Drew, if you look at the talent, I mean, this... Devils are done, but look at the talent level. There's not that bit of a spread. You could even argue that they're equal, if not Devils more talented overall. Who played well yesterday, and that's something to be speak of, was Marty Brodeur.
Well, that's good.
He's really sharp. I mean, and, you know, telling his critics, hey, I'm not washed up yet.
I mean, it's hard to ever think of a Marty Brodeur as going to be washed up.
82 saves out of 87 shots over his past 3 games.
So those are good numbers. So, you know, maybe he's turning good. But like you said, the Devils are done. So anytime they actually perform well on the ice, it sort of makes you stop and think to make sure you're actually not in some sort of Vanilla Sky universe.
Yeah, and you know what? If they can really stick to Jacques Lemaire's system, you can make teams beat themselves. And by that I mean with the trap.
Mm-hmm.
You make a lot of neutral zone turnovers, you turn it around, and they get some points. And Jacques Lemaire's, he's a structured guy, a very system-oriented coach, and maybe that's exactly what they need. Unfortunately, it's too little too late there.
In Columbus last night, in a shootout, the Blue Jackets beat the Red Wings 3-2. Good for the Blue Jackets to always, you know, they always have so much trouble with Detroit, so good for them to win.
The Columbus fans, you see that?
I saw that. The Columbus fans raised something about like $5,100 for some sort of charity. I'm not 100% sure what it was about.
They put it on the board like Ron Wilson. That's what it was.
Was that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're mocking Ron Wilson and his...
For good cause.
Yeah, for good cause. And the best part about that, the players agreed to match the fans' donation.
Nice.
So last night in Columbus, $10,000 raised for charity.
What actually happened was it was $5,100 raised for charity. It's actually every fan at the game gave $1.
Oh, that's nice.
About
$10,000 raised for charity in Columbus last night, but more important to the Detroit Red Wings. Thomas Holmstrom broke his hand.
Yep.
Probably going to be out, I think, a month.
4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, 4 to 6 weeks. Jimmy Howard.
Hurt his knee.
Apparently was limping badly as he left the ice. And this is a team that's also without Chris Osgood for the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, so Joey McDonald is their starting goaltender. I mean, you could put you in net there and you probably win a couple of games. But the truth is...
I was a floor hockey goalie for a couple of years.
That's true, you were. But Joey McDonald, isn't... Can he provide even serviceable net mining? Maybe. But the Howard injury didn't look that bad when I saw it. We'll see.
Yeah.
It didn't look like it was a serious one as Holmstrom, but knee injury for a goalie, obviously, is a tricky thing.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, it could have just been we wake up this morning and it would not be as bad as it looked, but apparently it was severe, a real big limp.
I would guess it's not that bad, but...
Well, and then the juggernaut just keeps on rolling there. Vancouver 4, Washington 2.
Spoke about it earlier, Drew.
Second night of a back-to-back, they can go and do that?
Second night of a back-to-back on the road.
Yeah, that's impressive. I mean, that's nothing but a good team who's taking care of business right now.
They controlled the game.
Yeah.
They got down 1-0, and then I think they were up 3-1, 3-2.
Yeah, and then just some insurance goal.
Longo was sharp.
Yeah, well, that's they're clicking on all cylinders. Looking forward to tonight's games. You know, the game that jumps out to me, well, you know, Pittsburgh-Boston this afternoon would be a great game, but Crosby's not playing, so that takes a little bit away from that.
I actually think this is going to help the Pittsburgh down the road, only because obviously the points matter, and as Craig Button said in, in the interview in the first segment, you know, the standings will matter because if they have to be 4 or 5, you get a harder first-round matchup. But I think getting Jordan Staal into the mix, having Crosby not there, gets him into the mix a little bit quicker.
And every game that Crosby doesn't play is sort of another game where he's a little bit more refreshed come the playoff time.
And every game Crosby doesn't play, you see how important he is, you know, in the MVP discussions.
Yeah.
It's not really a discussion. It's his award.
It's his award already, yeah. Exactly. And then, you know, really, I think, you know, the Rangers-Montreal tonight, good game.
Really good
original
game.
Original six matchup. Two teams that are, you know, sort of punching above their weight. The Rangers especially, no one thought that they'd be in fifth place in the Eastern Conference at this point.
P.K. Subban better watch himself. Apparently there's a little bit of a slew foot earlier this week, and the Rangers, including Brandon Dubinsky, are out to get him. Seems
really?
Like everybody's out to get him. I don't know why.
Well, he's a magnet for controversy at this point in time. The way he plays, and he's sort of brash and everything else, so it makes sense. But, you know, let's see what happens in the game. And that's, you know, the best way to get somebody is win the game. That's all I'm saying. Win the game.
Fair enough.
Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to go through news and notes in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. In the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you're just joining us, you've missed Craig Button of the NHL Network. He joined us off the top of the show. But fortunately, you can always download the latest version of the show through iTunes. So sign up to become an iTunes subscriber to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And of course, come join Michael Remus in the R Desk over at www.illegalcurve.com. He's talking hockey with all sorts of people there in the chat room. And, of course, coming up in about 15 minutes' time, we'll take some phone calls. That's at 780-1290 coming up in about 15 minutes' time. It's time for news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
Start off news and notes this week with, you know, Sidney Crosby has been out for about 5 or 6 games now with his concussion. We all suspect that he suffered the concussion during the Winter Classic.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of made his first public comments about the headshot in which David Steckel caught him, you know, earlier this week. You know, here's what Crosby said, and he said this after we got off the air last Saturday. "I didn't like them," Crosby said. "You talk about headshots and dealing with them, that's been something that's been a pretty big point of interest from general managers and players. When I look at those two hits..." The two hits are the one that he got from Steckel, and then another hit he got from Victor Hedman.
I didn't think the Hedman one was anything to write home about.
Okay, well, when I look at those two hits and we talk about blindside and unsuspecting player, there's no puck there on both of them, a direct hit to the head on both of them. When you go through the criteria, I think they fit all those. Really, the first time a player has sort of spoken out about headshots, and this isn't just any player.
Right.
This is the best player in the NHL, the face of the NHL, the future of the NHL. What are your thoughts on his comments, Richie?
First of all, Drew, I didn't think either of the hits were, I didn't think the first one was intentional by Steckel. I didn't think the second one was that bad. But when your best player talks, you have to listen. And I think this is what the NFL does really well. They protect their stars. The quarterbacks are the stars, and they will do anything in the world to protect the quarterback. You can't touch Tom Brady. You know, Tom Brady got injured for the first game of the season a couple years ago by a KC defensive lineman.
Yeah.
That rule, you know, grabbing like gone. You can't do that anymore. Yeah. I think this is the biggest.
You can't hit the quarterback below the knees now.
So what they're doing is, headshots protect everybody. But if your best player's talking about it, I mean, you have to be a little bit more harsh. And we're going to talk about it in, you know, coming up here with Gustavos.
Yeah.
The NHL is becoming more harsh in terms of concussion. That was the Gustavos suspension was the first one I've seen that was actually made me go, well. That's more significant than I thought they would.
You're talking about the 6 games that he got.
More significant punishment than I thought they'd hand out. But, hey, we on this show criticize them continually for being inconsistent and, more importantly, for not being harsh enough in their punishment. So I think with Crosby, him speaking out, you know, the suspension, those things kind of happening around the same time, a little bit after, the league's starting to come around and say, hey, we need to protect our guys, and the only way to do that is to hand out harsh suspensions. Now, in terms of the two incidents that Crosby's speaking about with himself, I think there's not as much
You don't think they were as bad as some of the other hits that have gone suspended.
That's right.
Maybe, you know, and I don't disagree with you there, because I do think that they were, you know, relatively innocuous.
One, I agree that they were innocuous. I think the first one was accidental. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And the second one, I mean, that happens all the time.
Yeah, it was just a clean... I thought it was just a hit by Hedman. He got a two-minute minor boarding penalty, but I didn't think there was any... You see a lot worse that goes a lot less, you know...
I think the issue there, Drew, was the fact that Crosby was probably still somewhat feeling the effects of the first incident when he got hit in the second. I think the second one, he started to feel some more symptoms. But in reality, guys, I think that the first concussion symptoms were still lingering, and then the second one brought him out.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably the case. You mentioned it. Let's segue over to the Detroit-Calgary game from last Saturday, I believe. That was last Friday, I apologize, and the suspension came out.
It was last Friday, yes.
Yeah, the suspension came out Sunday, I believe. Tom Kostopoulos, Calgary Flames forward, got 6 games for a blatant, unnecessary headshot on Brad Stewart.
Hold on.
You can talk about it. Go ahead.
I watched the game live, and I actually saw the hit, and I kind of saw it happening. I saw him running, and it ran in me kind of like James Wisniewski.
Yeah.
Last year in Anaheim.
That's right.
Against, was it Brent Seabrook?
Yeah, Chicago, yeah. Brent Seabrook.
Brent Seabrook. Yeah. And he ran at him, and when I was watching it live, I thought, "Oh my God! You know, like look at Kostopoulos running him. Look at Stewart, boom!" And he went down. I'm like, I kind of was focusing on that play as opposed to where the puck was, so to speak. And I thought, "Wow, that's dirty. That's a dirty play."
Well, what happened in the play is a bouncing puck. It went up in the air, and it sort of was, you know, Stewart was watching with his eyes, as you know anybody would, and it sort of bounced away. And then Kostopoulos took this run, really from the top of the face. The play was happening around the Detroit net, around the Detroit goal line, and Kostopoulos took this run, almost looked like from the top of the faceoff circle.
Well, that's the thing. Drew, when you look at it in the replay, you say, oh, Stewart might have touched the puck there. It might not look as bad. But when you watched it live, Kostopoulos was going to hit him no matter what.
Yeah, there was no intent to play the puck there.
I can understand the Flames' defense. Feaster came to the defense, and he said, you know what? He played the puck, and then he hit him. Okay, I understand you're defending your own player. And there is an argument for that. But to me, Stewart hardly played the puck. And the bigger issue was that Kostopoulos essentially ran him from the blue line.
Yeah.
He was going to hit him no matter what. And you say, oh, how do you know that? Well, he ran in from the blue line.
Kostopoulos
didn't know Stewart was going to touch the puck.
Kostopoulos had no idea where the puck was. I mean, he wasn't looking at the puck at all. He saw a vulnerable player in Stewart who was, you know, watching the puck and sort of had his head not focused on his opponent, and he took a run at him. I mean, it was pretty. He got 6 games for it, and the Red Wings. I mean, the Flames were upset, but you know, no general manager has ever said, "Yeah, my player deserved to get suspended."
Fair enough.
And the Red Wings were upset because they said, "You know, yeah, he got 6 games, and yeah, that's an okay start, but our guy's out for 6 weeks."
Yeah,
I thought this was pretty dirty. He took a, I mean, and it's up here. If you go to www.illegalcurve.com, you can see the video of it. I'm watching it right now. It just takes this long run and just shoulder right to the chin. He didn't need to hit him in the head. He didn't need to hit him in the head.
I actually didn't think he hit him in the head, but when he broke his jaw, clearly he hit him in the head.
Yeah. No, you can see his shoulder right to the chin.
Well, I thought it went shoulder into shoulder leading up to the chin. And there's a distinction there to be made, by the way. First initial point of contact was, I thought, shoulder. Regardless, we're not going
to,
you know.
You don't have to hit him that high when the guy's vulnerable. That's the thing that these guys do not understand.
Yes.
I don't understand why it's taking so long for NHLers to get it through their heads, you know. Hit the guy square in the chest or whatever with your shoulder, and you're not going to get suspended for it. Yeah. This is just it's a dirty play as far as I'm concerned, and there's no real other way to talk about it.
Let's get this trade in here before the break.
Okay, Woltek Wolski traded to New York in exchange for Michael Roosevelt. Woltek Wolski having a tough year in Phoenix. He had a good year a couple years ago, I believe.
Last year.
And Roosevelt has been the target of jeers from the Rangers for being overpaid, even though that's not his fault.
Not his fault.
But your thoughts on the trade?
I thought it was a good trade for both teams, actually, Drew. And Wolski, though, you have to wonder, hey, you know, Colorado, Quenville didn't have a great time with him. Sacco didn't like him at all. Goes to Phoenix, and they have him, and then Tippett ships him out. Is there an issue there with attitude? That was some of the rumblings. Talent-wise, he's a big guy. He's gauged. He's got good hands. Talent-wise, he's there. Talent-wise, he has the ability to be very good. Now, he's getting paid a fair amount of change here. $3.6 million this year, $4 million next year, so a $3.8 million cap it. But for a team that, you know, could use some more offense and has a great young defense, the Rangers, it's essentially a no-brainer.
And they recently lost the guy that they thought was going to provide them some offense this year in Alexander Frolov.
Now, with respect to, he was a bust, and that's very true, Drew.
But
with respect
Roosevelt,
his cap it's $5 million, but this is where the team like Phoenix comes into play. His cap it's $5 million. But they're so low, it doesn't matter. They're hardly I think, in the mid-level.
Yeah.
And then what they're actually paying out is $4 million this year and then $3 million the year after. So the money isn't as much.
So his cap hit is higher than his actual salary. And,
now,
and when it comes to Phoenix, what really matters is how many dollars are actually being taken from the taxpayers of Glendale to pay for the player.
$4 million, yeah, exactly. Now, what you're getting from Roosevelt is you're getting a guy who can move the puck. He can play fairly big minutes on a team that, you know, kind of just lost Ed Jovanovski now. It actually ends up really helping them. But it's older defense. Roosevelt seems older, but he's only 31. He's a good addition. He can move the puck. He can play on the power play. He can play in all situations, really. And Don Maloney is a guy who's familiar with Glenn Saylor. These guys make a lot of trades. If you know, over the past, Nigel Dawes moved through there. You know, they did they'd have done a bunch of trades in terms of between the two of them. And I think familiarity really helps in that regard. But overall, I thought the trade helps both teams. Phoenix needs some help in defense. Wolski wasn't fitting in there that well. The Rangers could use youth, and they're a very young team already.
Trade that seems like both guys needed a new start, and I think they provide good benefit for both teams.
It's an example, Drew, of the fact that a trade
there's not always a winner and a loser.
Exactly, especially in this NHL, you have to match money, dollar for dollar, and this is very close, by the way, in terms of dollar for dollar. $7 million left on Roosevelt's contract. I think it's $7.8 million left on Wolski. So
yeah.
There you go, matching dollar for dollar.
Trying to help each other's headaches is what you're doing there.
Win-win, in my opinion. But again, you're not talking about A-level players here.
No. Let's go to break. When we come back, we have more news and notes to talk about. Ron Wilson getting in trouble. Jack Johnson re-signing with the Kings. Lots more still to come. We're taking phone calls. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Provides, it's considered a contravention of the collective bargaining agreement.
As Tyler Dello, who he got quite a lot of attention for the, for the Marks of Art thing. He wrote a good post he had a good tweet on Twitter, and he said, $600 for some victory is a contravention of the rules, but taking the parents on father vacations, the whole team subsidizing family vacations is not.
Well,
where do you draw the line? I mean, there's a distinction to be made there, or there isn't. I mean, I don't know. I understand that this is the thing. The NHL is putting itself in a box by doing this. Now they have to police it like crazy.
Yeah.
That's what Elliot Friedman said yesterday. I was listening to him talking. You know what? Once you start, you can't
stop.
You set a precedent here. You could have ignored it. You could have done something quietly. You know, I don't know. I understand the position of the NHL here, but it just, again, to me, it's much ado about nothing.
Well, it's just typical NHL in that they always focus on the issues which are of insignificance. Whereas the bigger issues, the issues that are damaging your credibility with fans, and I'm talking about headshots, just go relatively, unnoticed. And it happens so often that you begin to wonder, why do they bother? And if you want to get your opinion heard on this issue, if you're, a passionate Leafs fan, if you think the NHL is focusing on the wrong issues, phone number is 780-1290. Give us a call, 780-1290, and we'll try and get you on the air here. But it's just always,
always something with Toronto because they look for a story.
Well,
it's never really the players. I mean, notice that, and the players, it's not a new thing. The players get off scot-free in Toronto. They don't get that much pressure. Ron Wilson gets a lot of heat.
Yeah, but as
Craig Button made mention of, right, guys? I realize your penalty killing is bad, and I have my issues with Ron Wilson, and I've defended Ron Wilson in the past as well. Look at it this way, though. When you go into the season and the talent they have, what were the expectations? Are the Leafs surpassing expectations? No. Are they playing that much worse than the expectations? No. I mean, he's got a bad team, and he's getting, unfairly criticized. And for this, I mean, this is a little bit of an issue. Just take a step back. I mean, he went into San Jose. He got fired from San Jose for not getting the job done. What was he the problem there? They haven't got the job done since he got fired.
I know. I mean, you're right. He gets unfairly criticized everywhere he goes. Let's get away from the Leafs because, why do we spend? I hate that we spend so much time talking about a perennially bad team.
Yeah.
Let's move to Los Angeles. Defenseman Jack Johnson of the LA Kings re-signed for 7 years and $30.5 million. Jack Johnson is really an interesting case. A very high draft pick of the Carolina Hurricanes. Number three overall. Got off to a bad start with the Hurricanes because they wanted him to come in and play.
He was in Michigan having
their
a good
system.
Time.
He went to Michigan instead, wanted to continue his college career. It went bad in Carolina very quickly. He traded him to LA. Has he found himself? Is he sort of playing to the potential that people thought when he was the third overall pick?
That's tough. I mean, we had Jimmy Fox on the show about a year and a half ago talking about, what's up with Jack Johnson? The guy has all the ability in the world. But, you know, what's holding him back? Has he improved since that point? In my opinion, yes. But at the same time, Drew, I mean, is he the all-around, you know, top defenseman? He has more points this year, sure, but Drew Doughty's sure to pick it up. The guy is a beautiful skater. He can move the puck. He can be physical when he needs to be. Talent-wise, you look at this guy, he's the kind of guy you look at in a hockey tryout, for example, and you think, oh, my God, this guy's got it all. But when you watch him play, does he have it all? I mean, he's improved. I don't have that much of an issue with this contract, but at the same time, I mean, you saw Mark Stahl sign a contract for $4 million. Is he better than Stahl? No. Stahl's contract, I thought, was great value for the New York Rangers. I thought he undersigned and, you know, undervalued himself, or his agent did that. At the same time, Drew, Jack Johnson, in my opinion, isn't in that class. As he eclipses the cap hit and make $400,000 more per year cap hit than Mark Stahl. I always wonder that, you know, in terms of the league. You're an agent and you say, well, is he better than Mark Stahl? Dean Lombardi. Is he better than Mark Stahl? Tell me he's better than Mark Stahl, and he's not. So why would I pay him more than Mark Stahl?
Well, he signed for 7 years. How many years did Stahl sign for?
I think 4 or 5.
Maybe he's getting a little bit more money because they're taking away those last, you know, he's getting, giving the Kings, committing to the Kings for a couple extra years. That might have something to do with it thought-wise. 780-1290, that's 780-1290 to get your opinion heard on this issue.
You're paying on potential, too. I like Jack Johnson, don't get me wrong. But I don't have that much of an issue with this contract. I'm not saying this is a terrible contract. It's all right. I mean, you can argue for it and against it, though.
Okay, that's fair. Are you worried about his motivation?
No, not really.
No? You don't think that he's one of those guys who's got the contract now?
Apparently he's one of the hardest workers. He's always in the best shape on the team. He's one of the hardest workers. I've heard good things about him in that regard.
So it was just sort of immaturity in his hang-up in Carolina?
It's kind of like a game maturity, an in-game maturity, reading the play, making the right decisions.
Okay. The NHL Central Scouting released their mid-season draft rankings. Apparently there's going to be a draft ranking special on TSN this coming Monday, I understand.
Yeah, Bob McKenzie tweeted about that.
Yeah. The Swedish-born players are at the top of the list right now, which is sort of a surprise.
Swedish-born players, developed in Canada.
Yes, the Swedish-born, which is a testament to the Canadian Hockey League, in that they're, you know, the Swedes, you know, that. And there was, I believe, a couple weeks ago, we spoke about that during Rapid Fire, yeah. I think, when, you know, I can't remember who the player was, but he was one of the first players to head over here because they thought his development would be better in the CHL than it would be in the Swedish Elite League.
At Landeskog, that's who you're talking about.
Yeah. That's right.
Gabriel Landeskog, and he's playing now. They say he's a Mike Richards clone. They say he's the first pick overall in the draft right now. I think that might switch. From what I see, I didn't get to see a significant amount of time of him play, especially in the World Juniors there, so I can't really comment. I don't like to comment on players I haven't seen play before. Heard good things, though. They say he's a Mike Richards clone. Couturier played in the World Juniors, got to see him in more than a few games there. He looked a little bit like he lacked confidence, but he's playing with the guys a year older, and he looked like he was a younger player. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, have seen small clips of him. People really like his game. And then this defenseman, Adam Larsson from Sweden, is getting good reviews. You know what? I don't know why we're getting so much hype in the midseason. There's a lot to play here. And there's a lot in play, and there's a lot of development to go on, and players can jump. Look at Jeff Skinner last year. At this point last year, Jeff Skinner was probably outside the top three.
Yeah.
Then he got drafted 7th overall, and he's probably the rookie of the year right now, in my opinion. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but it's nice to have the information, and Bob obviously does a great job providing nice insight into players that most people don't know anything about.
Thomas Vokoun is apparently in negotiations with the Florida Panthers on a contract extension. You know, I mean, I'm sure it's very nice to play in Florida. There's no pressure. The weather's warm all year round. For a guy who wants to win, is there any way he could actually stay in Florida and justify that he wants to be a Stanley Cup champion?
It's a good question. Is Florida going in the right direction? Absolutely, in my opinion. But the problem is, Drew, is that Jakob Markstrom is one of the top prospects in that system. He's playing in the AHL right now, a Swedish goaltender. Do you pay the money to Vokoun, who I think is a top five NHL netminder, to keep him along there? And you know, basically what you're doing is, are you paying him to protect your young players because he's so good? Because by the time you get good, Vokoun's gonna be 3 or 4 years down the road.
Well, Vokoun's 31 right now.
Vokoun's going to be 35, and then, you know, is he that good anymore? We'll have to see. So what years are you paying him for? I think that's the question. Markstrom, by the way, hasn't been that great in the AHL this year, so that's got to be something that might worry the Florida Panthers a bit.
But, I mean, seems to me that
if I'm rebuilding, Drew,
yeah.
I realize he's one of the best netminders, but if I'm rebuilding, if I can get a load for him, I obviously deal him. But if I don't get what I think is value, maybe try and re-sign him and maybe a little bit more money for 2 years or something like that. Maybe you pay him a fair amount of money. But again, this is probably, you know, Talon can draft. We know that. We know Talon can...
Dale Talon, Florida Panthers general manager.
We know Dale Talon can accumulate talent. Dale Talon's biggest issue was managing contracts. I'm very interested to see what he's going to do here because there's a lot of variables.
What I just don't understand is Vokoun's perspective as to why he would want to re-sign there. Even if they are going the right direction, and we all think they are, you know, don't you want to win at some point in time? Don't you want to win?
I think that team's going the right direction.
Yeah, but that team's not going to win anytime soon.
That's fair.
That team's not going to win in the next 2 or 3 years. They might have the talent, and they're going in the right direction, but still, I think they're a long way off from winning.
You know who should look to adding Vokoun?
I would say Detroit, but who are you going to say?
Detroit's not going to add him. They're not going to spend money on a goaltender. Toronto,
who's already got 17 goaltenders.
He would make that team a heck of a lot better because he's actually, you know, one of the top managers in the National Hockey League. Again, the issue there, of course, is, well, there's a lot of issues there. We you know, you don't like talking about them, Drew, but I want to bring them up because
he's a UFA right now. He makes $5.7 million.
Well, J.S.G. Garrett, after this, see, Drew, a UFA, and he's $7 million off the books. Why would, if you're Toronto, why would you not make a run at him with big money?
Well, I mean...
The top five NHL netminder, your team sucks. Let's not beat around the bush. The team sucks. Wouldn't you want to add him? How much better would he make you? He'd make you a lot better. Put that save percentage in the net. Oh, you'd be talking about fringe playoffs.
Well, the truth is...
That's what they should do.
You might have a point there, and I mean, the reason why you might have a point there is, I mean, we know that the Leafs' weakness is their offense. Their defense is overpaid, but not awful. So you put a very, you know, you put a top five NHL goaltender in there, plus a solid defense, you know, then you maybe reformat the way you're going to play your style, and then you might have something. So, you know, I apologize for poo-pooing your idea so quickly there.
We'll see, my friend. We'll see.
Okay. Final thing tonight. Chris Osgood, we mentioned it to both.
Tonight.
Today, you know.
No, it's dark in here, Drew, but.
Yeah. It's Chris Osgood injures his groin. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. That factor in with Jimmy Howard. I mean, you know, is this whose team is this for the playoffs? Is this Jimmy Howard's team for the playoffs?
100%. End of story. Well, he's gonna miss 4 starts, Osgood. 5 starts.
That's it.
Joey McDonald's not that much worse than him, so you know, yawn.
Okay. Well, but he's got six. But he's a Hall of Famer. He's got 600 wins.
400.
400 wins. 400 wins. I'm getting confused with Ron Wilson's 600th win.
He's no Hall of Famer, but again,
yeah.
Anyways,
let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the San Jose Sharks and try and answer the question, what's wrong with the San Jose Sharks?
If you know, you tell us, because we don't.
Well, that's right, 780-1290 if you know what's wrong with the San Jose Sharks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. The hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed the first hour, Craig Button of the NHL Network joined us at the top of the program. So we talked about all sorts of good things with Craig. He really gave some great insight and very candid. We appreciated him coming on. Still to come in the show, Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail, Vancouver Canucks beat writer, will be joining us at 11:30. And starting at 11 o'clock, CTV Winnipeg, Leah Hextall is going to be joining us in studio for the last hour of the program. If you want to get your opinion heard on everything in the hockey world, 780-1290. That's 780-1290. Give us a call. Perhaps you know the answer to what is wrong with the San Jose Sharks. Richard, the Sharks at this current state are 21 wins, 19 losses, and 5 ties. That's good for 47 points and 12th in the Western Conference. They're 2-8 in their last 10. They've lost 6 games in a row. Richard, the question simply, what is wrong with the San Jose Sharks?
Well, Drew, I mean, the first thing is they can't stop the puck. It comes down to it. They can't stop the puck. Niemi and Nidamak have been pretty bad. And that's the biggest thing. I mean, we talked about Nabokov, and you talked about he couldn't do this, he couldn't do that, and there's a lot of things that he couldn't do. He really couldn't win the big game, okay? He couldn't win it. But he could stop the puck in the regular season. He got him to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Wasn't that bad. Look at Nidamaki's numbers right now. Nidamaki's at .901 save percentage, and Niemi's at .907.
They've pretty much done a good job splitting time, 24 games for Niemi and 22 games for Antero Nidamaki. So, I mean, they just haven't found a goalie that they could really ride, and both of them are struggling.
The truth is, Drew, that you came to the season basically with that idea. we're going to play, split them, try and get production from both of them and see what we can do. Ninomaki had some pretty nice numbers, but he never really done it, you know, for an extended period of time. Hasn't proven this year that he can do it for an extended period of time. Niemi, sheltered by an amazing team last year, has been all right, but, I mean, nothing special. You look at the save percentage in the NHL, I mean, these guys aren't anywhere near the top. They're no Hiller. They're no Vokoun. And this team has a hole on defense. Rob Blake's been missed.
Well, I mean, we said that at the beginning of the year. So it's not a surprise to us that the Sharks are struggling on defense.
Quickly, let me get in there. Niemi is 29th in the National Hockey League in save percentage. 29th.
That's awful.
And Ninomaki's way down. So 29th, guys. The goaltending's not there. Now, you talk about the team. In terms of the offense, okay, hold on. They're leading the league in shots. It's a pretty good sign, leading the league in shots. And they're not that bad in terms of shots against either. So controlling the play, not that bad. Can't save the puck. And now I see a lot of similarities here between the San Jose Sharks and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I was going to say that. They seem to be, they're a mirror image of each other, loaded up front, having problems in the
net. Sixth best team in the NHL preventing shots. So you're first in shots for, you're sixth in terms of shots against.
So we'll save the few shots that you're getting is what you're saying.
That's an issue. I mean, the other issue, Drew, of course, is obviously, you know, we talked about the back end, but I mean, they haven't had that much luck up front. I mean, when you control the puck like that, you shouldn't be 12th in the Western Conference, right? Now, power play wise, special teams is obviously a factor. Special teams is always a factor. Fifth overall in the NHL in power play. So you look at this team, Drew, and you know they call the peripheral stats. You look at the stats that matter.
Yeah,
they're grading out pretty well.
But they're not grading out on the ice that very well, and that's the problem. I mean, you look at this defense, and I mean, you know, we'll talk a little bit later on in the show about Dan Boyle and the ice time he's logging. But I mean, Dan Boyle is really the only, you know, quote unquote household name that you know of on their defense.
Fair enough.
They have a lot of, you know, Mark Edward Vlasic and Douglas Murray both had high expectations. But you know, they haven't lived up to them. They've both, you know, struggled to say it mildly this year. And then after those, you know, so you have a, you know, Dan Boyle who's the number one defenseman.
Number one defenseman.
Then you have, you know, Vlasic and Murray who are being asked to carry a heavier load this year than in years past.
They don't have the safety net
of Rob Blake.
Break down this defense quickly. Okay.
Yeah.
You have Dan Boyle. Dan Boyle is an exceptionally good puck mover. He can quarterback the power play. He has terrific hockey sense. He's not great defensively, Drew. Let's not be crazy. He's not great defensively, but he does a lot of good things for your team, okay? That's what he brings to the table. He's a puck mover. He can be number one. You know, he lacks in terms of in certain defensive regards, but we'll deal with that after, okay? Then you got Douglas Murray. Douglas Murray is a solid stay-at-home defenseman. He is built like a brick house. You can't get, you know, you can't knock
him. I'm glad you said brick house.
Yeah, you can't knock him over, okay? Puck moving is not great. Feet, not great. He's slow. Mark Edward Vlasic, on the other hand, is a tremendous skater. He moved the puck pretty well. Has had his spurts playing well defensively, but isn't great. Has some lapses. And then offensively, hasn't really lived up to the expectations. So right there, Drew, you know, your top three defensemen, there's really flaws in all of their games, okay? Nicholas Wallin is a third-pairing defenseman. He's a stay-at-home defenseman. He has no puck skills whatsoever, really. He make an okay first pass, but he has no offensive skills. Pretty solid defenseman, though. Stay-at-home, you know, gets the puck out of the zone, solid. Ken Huskins, limited in his regard, maybe a sixth defenseman, fifth you're reaching, okay? And then Jason Demers is a young puck mover who really hasn't come into his own yet and has struggled in many respects. That's your top six.
There's nothing there that excites you.
It's not Lidstrom, Mafalski, Stewart, Cronwall.
It's not even...
It's not Hamhuis, Ballard, you know, Bieksa. It's depth-wise and even top-heavy. It's not that. Those are the two best teams in the conference. So look at it this way, Drew. Do you match up with Detroit and Vancouver in goal? No.
No.
Do you match up... And Howard's not that great, in my opinion. Do you match up with those teams on the back end?
No, not by a long shot.
Do you match up with them in forward?
Do you match up with them in forward?
You can argue that you do.
Yeah, I mean, you have a better chance of matching up with them at forward. But, I mean, you look at this defense. I mean, this has got to be one of the bottom five defenses in the NHL.
No, I wouldn't go that far. I don't hate the defense. I just don't think... I think it's limited.
Well, now, how can you not hate this defense?
There are assets there. Now, what you need, Drew, you need maybe a strong two-way defenseman. As Craig Button says, they're not growing on trees. But what about a guy like Robin Regier? You make the money work, by the way. What about a guy like Chris Phillips?
Yeah, I mean, these are all...
You have to get rid of a guy like Devin Setoguchi, a really speedy player who hasn't come into his own yet, to get a solid defenseman. You have to do it. I mean, at some point, you're not mortgaging the future if you trade one good young player. and not Logan Couture. If you trade one good young player to get a defenseman.
Because with this team, the way it's currently designed, there is no... I mean, I don't think right now, if they don't make a deal, this is... I mean, and I think you and I disagree on this, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs.
What if this, though? What if they, you know, going back into last segment, what if they make the splash and get Thomas Fokuda? Whoa, hold on. Then you change the weight of the Western Conference, in my opinion.
You think by putting Vokun on this team, even with this lousy defense?
Look at the numbers, Drew. Look at the numbers.
Yeah, I know.
They're bound to score more, by the way. Their odds, their shooting percentage is going to go up. Because you don't lead the league in shots and then whatever they are in goals. I think 17th. They're going to go up.
I'll tell you what. Vokun, I mean...
If you were to get Thomas Vokun on this team, if you make the money work and you put some young prospects into it, why wouldn't you? It's one of the best goalies in the National Hockey League. Goaltending has always been your Achilles heel. At least at the times that it matters. Your goaltending now is not very good. Why wouldn't you? Be bold. Doug Wilson is one of the best general managers of the National Hockey League. One issue he has is he's not bold enough sometimes.
Well,
he has to make that move.
Yeah, I mean, we know that. We know that he's not bold because we've seen him, you know, stay with the stand pat with this lineup for the last couple of years. You know, you've mentioned Vokun in the last two segments. Why don't you, you know, tell our listeners what makes Vokun such a special goalie? This is a guy who's played in anonymity most of his career. You know, he's not well known. He's known that he's a good goaltender, but he's not. What skill set does he bring, and why is he, in your mind, one of the top five goaltenders?
He's big. He's quick. He cuts down his angles. He's flexible. He's very positionally sound, Drew. He's always leading the NHL in save percentage. He's always in the top 10 in save percentage. He's consistent. He does everything that you want a goaltender to do. Everything.
Okay.
The numbers are there. The physical skills are there. He's got a pretty calm demeanor. Now, you say, oh, he hasn't really been tested in pressure situations, you know, in Nashville and Florida. The guy played in the Olympics. I'm not worried about the pressure situations. The guy's played in the Olympics. He's played well in the Olympics. Put him on a team that actually is good enough to actually compete. And I realize some will say, well, what about the Nashville team in the first round, you know, a couple years back that lost to San Jose with Forsberg, Kariya, all those guys? Yeah, but that San Jose team was a juggernaut.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're losing against, his playoff experience is limited.
San Jose should look heavily into that move, in my opinion. Because right now, it's goaltending's the issue. Defense is the issue, and goaltending especially.
And you think goaltending's more of the issue than...
I don't know. I would address both. But you can really address your defense by addressing your goaltending. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you can do it both ways. You can say, I'm addressing my goaltending by adding to my defense. Or you can significantly add to your defense by addressing your goaltending. And I would actually err towards adding a goaltender in this situation because their defense actually isn't as bad as I think some people think it is. It's not great. It's middle of the pack.
You think that's middle of the pack?
No, it's 15 to probably... It's probably 15, around 15 to 20. You know, middle of the pack. 10 to 20 is middle of the pack.
Yeah. I mean, it's just... The names don't jump out at you, and that doesn't necessarily mean anything. But it's...
One thing that they lack, Drew, is you know, a little bit of foot speed back there, too. Though. And this is the issue, though. You know, you talk about Murray is not a great skater. Wallin is not a great skater. In terms of speed, great skater. Huskins, you know... Can move a bit for a bigger guy. It's not that big, but Boyle's a good skater. Vlasic's a good skater. Do you want to add another guy who's kind of slow? You know, Robin Regier and Chris Phillips are tremendous shutdown defensemen.
They're not the fastest guys.
They both lack foot speed.
Yeah. So now you got a defense that and these guys are rentals. So you're paying a lot for a rental for a guy who might
Regier's
not be
a rental.
Regier's not a rental, but Regier's overpaid.
I don't know about that. I don't agree with that.
Really?
Yeah. I think in the right situation, he would be more than worth his value. You're telling me he's not as good as Danny Hamhuis when put up on a solid team, not a poor team like Calgary, with no forwards ever driving the puck into the right direction? I still think he's got something left in the tank. I don't think his contract is unreasonable. He's, I believe, at $4 or $4.1 million cap hit.
Four for the next few years.
There you go. I mean, in the right situation, rejuvenated.
It's worth watching. The question is, it boils down to, is Dougie Wilson going to be bold for the first time in a long time in his career?
Well, he went into the season with the same idea that Steve Yzerman did, platooning goaltenders.
And hasn't worked.
In either, really. Will he act like Steve Yzerman did, or will he sit back?
That's interesting, because, Yzerman has been nothing if not very proactive. And, both of these goalies Niemi's a free agent after this season.
Yeah. I think Nidamaki signed a two-year deal, didn't he?
Yeah, Nidamaki signed a two-year deal at $2 million. But, Vokun and Nidamaki, you can do something with that combination.
It doesn't matter about combination once you have Vokun in there.
Well, I'm just saying. You're paying your backup $2 million, but it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, it's overpaying him, but it's not the end of the world. You know, so that's a bit of a problem. Anyways, let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to, what do we have coming up after this? We have Statistically Speaking coming up, and I believe we'll have some phone lines are working, so we'll be able to take your calls, 780-1290.
Great.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:15 this morning. 780-1290, that's 780-1290. We'll take some calls about whatever is on your mind in the hockey world. And in between that, we'll talk about Statistically Speaking. Richard, we're going through some of the more important stats in the hockey world this week. And let's start with this one about the Vancouver Canucks. And really just goes to show how important this is in terms of your success. That is the Canucks leading the NHL in face-off winning percentage right now with a successfully winning draws at a 55.8% clip. You know, for people who sort of, devalue or don't understand the value of winning, face-offs, how important is it to have possession of the puck to start, each and every play?
It's so important, Drew. It's so important. I mean, you look at the Vancouver Canucks, they lead the league in shots. Sorry, they're top five in shots. They control the puck. They lead the league in faceoff percentage. 55.8. What about San Jose? San Jose's second in faceoffs. They lead the league in shots. So when you have the puck, it seems simple.
Yeah.
Controlling the puck, the other team doesn't have it. If you are winning 58 faceoffs at 55.8% of the time, you're starting to play with the puck. Now you already have tremendous talent and even strength, the power play. You have the talent there. If you get those talented players the puck, the game's that much easier. It's very important.
Next stat that sort of jumped out at us when looking at the game, the Penguins, Pittsburgh Penguins, lead the NHL in penalty minutes per game at 16.1 now, penalty minutes per game.
That's not as significant as the next stat.
That's right. The next stat is that they have the most minor penalties in the NHL so far this season. 227 penalties, wow, when the next closest in the NHL is 208.
Too many, Drew. And if you want to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, I mean, I know Anaheim's done this before, and they've been the most penalized team, and they kind of went all the way through. It's rare, though, to be able to, they had Pronger and Niedermeyer.
Yeah.
And they had, and Jaguar was playing out of his mind. Nowadays, I mean, in almost every generation, if you're leading the league in penalties, I mean, this Pittsburgh team has a lot going for it. But if it doesn't start playing a disciplined game, 227 minor penalties, The next team in line is 208. 19 more minor penalties than them. You got to cut down on that. If you want to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, Pittsburgh, you got to cut down on those minor penalties.
Brian in Tuxedo is online. He wants to talk about Dan Bylsma's effect on the Penguins' penalty kill. Brian, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Oh, hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk about the Penguins' penalty kill. Now, how much do you think that their penalty kill reflects, the coach, Dan Bylsma? We all saw the 24/7, and we saw, what a great coach he is. I gained a lot of respect for him, but I think, the team plays, like how he played as a player, he wasn't much of a scorer, but he was a guy who went out for, all the penalty kills. He was a grinder. And I think, his toughness and his toughness as a player really reflects the toughness of a team.
I think that's a good point because it's funny. Our next stat here is as much as they're taking the most minor penalties in the National Hockey League, that's 227. The Pittsburgh Penguins are the best penalty-killing team in the National Hockey League. And I think, Brian, you raised a good point there. 87.4 success rate. Coaching has a lot to do with penalty killing.
Yeah.
That's one of the knocks on Ron Wilson.
That's right, because the Leafs have the perennially terrible power penalty kill.
And while I think that Dan Bylsma has a significant effect on the penalty kill there, let's also point attention to the fact that they had Zdeněk Mihajlík in offseason.
A huge addition on the blue line.
You pull out Gonchar, okay. Gonchar's an offensive guy. You put in Zdeněk Mihajlík, play against your team, the other team's best players, block a lot of shots. That has been a significant contribution to the penalty killing success as well. So Bylsma has a significant effect, absolutely. Mihajlík, probably more of an effect.
Brian, thanks very much for the call. 780-1290, that's 780-1290 if you want to get in on the phone call action here. Speaking of blocked shots, the Atlanta Thrashers lead the NHL in blocked shots right now, in both total blocked shots and blocked shots on the road.
Now, the reason we bring up blocked shots on the road, Drew, is because many times there's a home bias in taking statistics into account. So some team will
statistician.
There's a couple reasons for this team being that good in blocked shots. Now, of course, we've talked about it before. You don't always want to be top in blocked shots because that sometimes means you don't have the puck enough. And that's an issue. But in terms of this Atlanta team, and they don't have the puck that much. I mean, they're not controlling the puck like Vancouver or Detroit are. But this is a team that has added a guy like Brent Sopel.
Yeah.
The guy's a shot-blocking machine.
That's all he does.
So it's... In reality, it's good to be out, you know. I mean, if you're not controlling the puck all the time, even if you aren't controlling the puck all the time, you want to be blocking shots because you're preventing shots on your net. It's good to be at the top there. I mean, the Rangers were at the top there recently. I mean, this is a team. If you look at the block shots right now in this team, Brent Sopel has 105 block shots. One of the main reasons they got him was for penalty killing and block shots. And Chicago misses him on the 5-6 spot there. They miss him. Make no mistake about it. Tobias Enstrom, 99 block shots. Ron Hainsey, 94. Oduya, 87. Their defensemen block shots. Bogosian, 55.
It's an underrated defense as well. Well,
we've talked about this defense before the season and during the season.
Yeah, I mean, but
1 through 6, very deep.
Yeah, very deep. And when you're putting Brent Sopel there, is, you know, and Brent Sopel is certainly a very serviceable NHLer. He does, you know, he has his limitations, but what he does do well, he does very well.
There's a skill in blow shots. I mean, you have to have a willingness to sacrifice your body. You have to be in the right position. There's a lot of things that go into that.
You know, they say, quote unquote, that when a team plays on a road, sometimes they play a very good road game, quote unquote.
Yeah.
You know, blocking shots on the road, as the Thrashers are doing, is emblematic of playing a very good road game. 780-1290 to get in on the conversation. Moving to San Jose, where we were just...
Drew.
Sorry, I forgot there. I just saw the name, and it immediately reminds me of a Tampa Bay like thing. Dan Boyle, you know, talking about the Sharks' poor defense, leads the NHL in ice time, 27 minutes and 3 seconds per game. Last year, he was at a 26-minute, 12-second clip per game. You know, smaller guy... You know, if the Sharks make the playoffs, which is still a big if, is Boyle going to have anything left in the tank?
They're going to make the playoffs, first of all. Take away that if. But I think this is something to pay attention to, guys.
I don't fully understand why you're so adamant that they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, this is a team that's going to make the playoffs. But, you know, you look at it, it's only, you know, a minute more per game, essentially. That's not a big deal. You know, a shift or two per game. Well, one of those every single, you know, for 82 games, that's a lot more minutes. That's a lot more wear and tear. You know, you're playing that many minutes a game. You want to go deep into the playoffs. That's what the intention is here with this team. I would, you know, one thing you'd say is I'd like to scale back if I'm Todd McClellan. The issue, though, Drew, and as we mentioned, the defense isn't great, good enough for them to scale back. So if you adding a defenseman doesn't only add to your overall talent level. What it does is it scales back some of the other guys' minutes. And not only does it cut down on some of the worst players, you know, some of your worst defensemen's ice time, and thereby, you know, getting a positive effect on, you know, shot totals or whatever it may be, but also it lets your best players play a little bit less, especially, at least in these games, which, you know, quote-unquote, shouldn't matter as much if you're San Jose, although they do because you're out of the playoffs right now. If you can cut down on that, then you'll be more fresh for the playoffs. You know, Chris Pronger, similar situation there.
That's right.
You spread around the ice time with Coburn and obviously Carl generally plays with Pronger, but Coburn and Teeman and guys like that, because when it gets down to it, you want to play Pronger 30 minutes a night in the playoffs. If you play him 30 minutes a night in the regular season, you can't play him 30 minutes a night in the playoffs because he can't do it.
That's what we said. When he got injured, it's maybe a blessing in disguise because he stays fresher for that. You know, he'll stay fresh into the playoffs that much longer.
Now, if San Jose had a defense like Philly did, then
they'd probably be at the top of the Western Conference again. But that's their problem. Right now, I think they're going to use up all their resources just getting to the playoffs, you're insistent they're going to get there. Are they going to have anything left in the tank, especially if they go against... I mean, you know, get stuck with Vancouver or Detroit, it's going to be... It'll be quick and painful if you're a Sharks fan. 780-1290.
Sharks did beat Detroit last year, though, Drew.
Different team.
Not that different.
It's a different team, and Detroit's a different team.
That's fair.
Detroit's a different team. I'm not saying San Jose's not.
I would pick Detroit in that series. I'm just saying give San Jose some credit here. You're really bashing San Jose today.
You know, I don't like what they've done here. I think that
what they haven't done maybe is better.
Well, yeah, what they haven't done, how they haven't replaced, you know, the makeup of this team. You know, if we can see the problems going ahead into the season, why did the Sharks not think that it would be a problem?
We need a 24/7 San Jose Sharks.
Well, I mean, honestly, why did they think it would be that, you know, this would suffice during the regular season?
Fair. That's fair.
That's just my point.
We've ranted about that before.
I know. I don't understand it. It's you know, patently obvious. Oh, we're shocked about it.
I know the team is panicking because Joe Thornton, when I watched them this week, Joe Thornton was shooting a lot. That means he's not comfortable.
Speaking of shots on goal, Dustin Byfuglien, you know, defenseman for the Atlanta Thrashers, is second in the NHL with shots on goal with 190 shots. His shooting percentage is 8.4% this year. His career average is 8.6%. How remarkable is it to see a defenseman ranked second in shots on goal?
It's crazy. 190 shots on goal for a defenseman? Give him credit. And this is the biggest thing about this stat, Drew. 190 shots on goal. His shooting percentage, you say, oh, Byfuglien is tearing it up on the score sheet. He must really be hitting at a high percentage. No. His shooting percentage this year is 8.4. His career average is 8.6, you know, including this year. 8.6. So essentially, he's on his career levels. So if he, what that really says is if he's generating so many shots on goal. So if he continues to generate this shots on goal and keeps up his regular career pace, he's going to continue at this scoring level. For a defenseman to be doing that is unbelievable, and he needs to be given due credit. Now, do I think he's a Norris Trophy winner? No, because Nicholas Lidstrom has been otherworldly, as he always has been throughout his career. But Byfuglien, to be able to sustain that level, at least even halfway through a season, to me is a testament to him taking his game to the next level and to Craig Ramsey's confidence in him.
Dustin Byfuglien, 46 games played, 16 goals, 25 assists, 41 points.
The only guy who has more shots than Dustin Byfuglien in the entire National Hockey League is Alex Ovechkin.
It is remarkable. I mean, this is a guy who's playing...
Not Steven Stamkos.
No. I mean, then there's some...
More shots on goal than Steven Stamkos.
Stamkos, a guy that, earlier in the year, everyone, he's going to get 60 or 70 or 80.
Oh, Ezzy.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Ezzy, of course, he might have been suffering from the preliminary stages of the scurvy that he now has right now. Anyways, let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to go on the beat, and it looks like Dan is on line one is going to talk about head hits. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.